Have you ever been chatting with friends? And maybe the topic of a piece of clothing, a trip you want to take, a television show that you watched recently comes up. And moments later, as you begin to scroll through your phone, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter ads begin to pop up about that exact same thing your friend was just talking about, even though you'd never heard of it before. Well, you're not alone. We have all noticed our information following us around the on the internet, on every site, from conversations we're having near our phones. I wanted to find out more about this and really understand the ramifications of it. So I reached out to Shobita Parthasarathya, professor of public policy and director of science, technology, and public policy program at the University of Michigan, who says the concerns surrounding privacy laws and our personal data will continue to grow as laws continue to monitor more of our daily lives, which sounds like a terrifying concept. Shobita, welcome to Culture Shift.
Hi, Ryan. It's great to be here.
So I want to start at that first place, which I hear so many people talk about, where they say, I had this conversation, and then I immediately see an ad for it on my phone, which leads a lot of people to think they're being audio targeted, that their phone is actually listening to them. Is that true? Is that how that works?
Well, they're definitely being tracked in various ways. I mean, if you're using Alexa or Siri or, you know, any of the various voice assistants, that data is being collected by those companies. But of course, it's also true. It's been true for a while. Anytime you use the internet, anytime you're, you know, searching around for things, that information is being tracked by those companies. And invariably, it's also being sold to other companies, to third parties, and then it gets basically repackaged to give you targeted ads, whether you like it or not.
That's the thing. So people, they're not necessarily being listened to, which is really where the alarm bells go off for people. I think that's the thing that really upsets people. But in reality, a lot of these companies already have things like your search history, your past purchases, your online profiles, your favorite websites. So they already have quite a bit of information. They don't actually really need to listen to you.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the more that our daily lives are entirely dictated by our electronic devices, the more the companies that provide those services have taken advantage. And so they are also looking to make a profit. And invariably, you know, we should always, I am one of those people who, of course, likes free apps, and I'm sure many of your listeners do too. But the trade-off with those free apps basically is that we're giving up a lot of information, usually. Sometimes that's true with paid services too, I should say. But basically the currency, the main currency, is our data, really. It's something that the scholar Shoshana Zuboff calls surveillance capitalism. And that's basically the age that we're living in these days. And most of the time, I don't think we're really aware of the consequences of that.
Maybe this is what I like to call a stupid question for a smart person like you, Shobita, but why is my data valuable at all?
Well, the hope is that you're going to buy more stuff, right? So that's the first thing, is to sell us stuff. You know, I mean, I think you've probably noticed for a while, I certainly do, you know, I do one search for one object, or I put in a few words related to something. And then, as you say, it follows me around, right? Ads for whatever it is. But that's not the only thing that information does. It's also trying on a more broad sense to understand customer preferences, right? It's kind of supercharged marketing of all kinds. So of course, you'll probably remember that in 2018, there was that huge scandal with the company or the firm Cambridge Analytica and Facebook, because Facebook had sold a lot of our data. And basically, it was being used for political targeting. Of course, in addition to the sort of consumer side, right, targeting in various ways, people use it to aid, the companies use it to aid law enforcement. They use it to monitor their own performance. And they also, of course, use it. I mean, what they will often say, right? What you will often see when you have a cookie request, right? Should I accept or reject cookies? Often what the browser will say is to improve the usability of your experience, we use cookies. Of course, they use cookies for far more than that. They're just, they realize that that's probably not going to be their best foot forward. So they're not leading with that information.
If we were going through this whole process of trying to understand what exactly these companies, these apps have on us, right? They have a ton of information. And it kind of comes down to how people perceive that information. I genuinely believe that some people think that maybe it's just their name or their phone number or a website they visited. But the reality is these are pretty complex profiles of who we are as people that oftentimes they're building from this data. Isn't that right?
Yes. So I would say one thing first, though, which is that I have noticed, I'm happy to say, that people have become somewhat more concerned about this issue, right, about privacy in the last few years. But there is a fundamental, I think, point, which is, well, I'm not doing anything wrong. There's nothing wrong with my data. Why should I care so much about data privacy? And I think usually the way I respond to that is, first of all, we're pretty careful about what we tell other people about our health status, for example, right? Or our personal relationships. But in fact, that kind of information is being gathered by these companies. And so I think that's one easy way to think about it. The second is that, and we've seen this, I think, we've seen this with the Dobbs ruling on abortion just in the last few days, that things that were legal one day can become illegal the next day. And so, the behaviors that we think are entirely, legal and unproblematic can get reconsidered. But specifically to your question about the complexity of the data, what companies will often say is that, oh, don't worry, the data that we're collecting about you is anonymous. So you don't really need to be worried. We're just really creating, we're really just, working in a kind of creating profiles, essentially. But the problem with that is that these days we're talking about such enormous troves of data that in fact, they can triangulate data from lots of different sources to produce a pretty complete picture of you. And often you are disclosing information about yourself that you don't even realize. So for example, if your Facebook profile picture or one of the pictures that you posted on Facebook is of your house, for example, I was listening to NPR the other day, and there's some young person who is really good at telling from a house where exactly that house is located. And that's just the human, right? Imagine if it's a digital device or an algorithm that's basically able to harvest multiple data sources and calculate essentially where you are, perhaps down to your street, if not more specifically than that. So you are actually giving up a lot more data than you're even disclosing, and certainly more than you're realizing.
That brings up the important question of when do we start to panic or push back against data collection like this? I mean, what options do we really have to say, I don't want to play this game or be this vulnerable?
Yeah, I certainly think we should be pushing back. I think we should have been pushing back a long time ago. The good news is that it's starting in the United States. So Europe actually has something called the General Data Protection Regulation that's pretty comprehensive. It includes a right to know what information a business is collecting about you, the right to delete personal information about you, the right to opt out of the sale of your information, among other things. And California has actually passed a pretty similar law. And I think there are a couple of other, I believe Virginia also has a similar law. Illinois is considering one. So there are states that are doing this. Unfortunately, of course, you know, state by state is not the best way to do it. It would be better to have a federal data protection law. It's worth saying that Michigan has absolutely nothing. So, we need to be contacting our legislators to push for this. Of course, there are also things that you can do on an individual level, but, you know, I feel like, you know, I do those things, you know, I try to be careful about the search engines that I use and the text messaging apps that I use. And I try not to say yes to cookies, but that I feel like I'm often swimming against the tide. I think those are really important, especially important if you're in a precarious situation for some reason. But what we really need is law.
We're talking to Shobita Parthasarathy, professor of public policy and director of science, technology, and public policy program at the University of Michigan, about our personal data as it continues to be used in ways to monitor our daily lives in increasingly intimate ways. And I want to bring callers into this conversation. Open lines right now at 313-577-1019. Has this changed the way that you're using the internet? Are you concerned about how your data is being used so you've stopped using certain social media sites or certain apps? Are there tools that you're using to try to cover your tracks digitally when you use the internet? Or are you not too concerned at all about how your data is being used? Go ahead and give me a call and join this conversation. Maybe you got a question on your mind too. 313-577-1019. That number is 313-577-1019. Now, I'm really curious, you know, has there been, you talked a little bit about some states that have tried to pass things or successfully have. I mean, what are the qualifications in those laws? What are they saying that companies can and can't do?
Right. So basically, they are saying that if companies want to collect your data, then they need to provide you with informed consent, basically. That if you if there is information out there about you that you don't like, you have the right to get that stuff deleted. And that you can opt out of the sale of your personal information. And so those are, you know, and there's also, I should say, there's a right to non-discrimination for exercising those rights. So those are the main four tenets, for example, in the California law that is the most comprehensive. And it's been around for a few years. I think because it's California, it'll be interesting to see how that affects the country as a whole, right? So, you know, obviously these companies, if they provide Californians with some of these rights, then there's some, you know, pressure for them to do it elsewhere. But there's still a patchwork. And it's not completely clear how this will work, again, if you're talking about data across state lines.
We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to start talking about privacy laws, apps, and social media as it relates around the Supreme Court ruling with Roe v. Wade and how things like period tracking apps are starting to come into the crosshairs of how our data is used, not only by corporations, but also potentially by law enforcement. That conversation coming up next here on Culture Shifts. Join the conversation with us too, 313-577-1019. What are your concerns about your data? Is there anything you're doing differently? Is there anything you're worried about? Go ahead and give us a call, 313-577-1019, and we'll continue this conversation next here on Culture Shifts. You're listening to Culture Shifts. Right now, we're talking about your data and you with our guest, Shobita Parthasarathy, professor of public policy and director of science, technology, and public policy program at the University of Michigan, dealing with a lot of these concepts about how it's rapidly changing about how our data is used. And you know, when we booked this conversation, Roe v. Wade, still part of this country. Since then, it no longer is. The Supreme Court decision to strip away constitutional protections for abortion. And this has brought a lot of attention to a particular type of app and how our data could potentially be used by law enforcement. Shobita, can you talk a little bit about why we are talking so much about period tracking apps right now following that Roe v. Wade decision?
Yeah, sure. So now we are looking at a country where a significant part is likely to criminalize abortion, probably completely, we expect, right? And so, of course, if you're criminalizing abortion, then the next question, how are you going to find out where, when, who is performing those abortions? And now we have all of this data about ourselves floating around. And so period tracking apps, of course, is something that many of us use to make life easier and to make life more predictable. But of course, when we are pregnant, those period tracking apps reflect that information, right? And so that has gotten a lot of attention as a place that, you know, where the, you know, what is happening with that data? Where is it collected? To what extent is it available to law enforcement? But I would say that that's just the tip of the iceberg. So in the case of the period tracking apps, you've got data that you're providing, and there's been a flurry of news articles and attempts to ask these apps. And basically what the apps say is we have never, you know, usually they say some version of we've never provided any of this data to law enforcement. Of course, that's, you know, you can drive a truck through that. That doesn't mean that they won't in the future. But in addition to that, many of these period tracking apps that we use are free. And the reason that they're free is because the information that we are providing is then sold again to a third party, right? And those third parties, often those that third party data is then sold to law enforcement. And so that's another point of potential danger, not only in terms of what I was saying before, in terms of the profiles of people that, law enforcement might build, in terms of who's getting these apps, who's getting these services, where are they getting these services, et cetera, but also more personal information about, you know, our choices to, you know, for example, travel out of state to get an abortion. But then, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, please.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I said that period tracking apps are just the tip of the iceberg. And I think that that's so incredibly important to say because, you know, there was actually a case in Mississippi a few months ago where a woman was miscarrying. She was taken to the hospital and she disclosed to, I believe it was either she disclosed or her husband disclosed that she had induced the miscarriage. And so law enforcement used that to go back and look at her search engine history. And in the search engine history, they saw, you know, searches like, you know, looking, for example, for abortion pills. And so those are the kinds of things that we're likely to be able to see. So some people are concerned, for example, that, you know, about things like this, or, you know, you might go through healthcare providers, right? The law enforcement might be able to find, especially there are these things called crisis pregnancy centers that are often set up by anti-abortion organizations, and they collect data about you. And they might be able to essentially create probable cause so that law enforcement could come in and look at your search engines, look at your location data, look at your text messages, et cetera.
And this isn't a small portion of the population that are using these apps. Nearly a third of American women have been using period tracking apps. That's from a survey done in 2019 by the Kaiser Family Foundation. And two of the most popular ones here in the United States, Flow and Clue, have more than 55 million users combined. And in the case of Flow, they've already been accused of giving out personal data. So these are very realistic concerns that people are bringing up.
Absolutely. I mean, as I was saying before, right, the business models for a lot of these organizations has been that they make it free to you, the consumer, but they make their money on the back end by selling your data. And so, you know, that's a central part of their business models, and they're not necessarily going to turn it on a dime. You know, and that makes it difficult, obviously, for us, those of us who are relying on these technologies. And, you know, there is, you know, I think the best case scenario is that we delete these apps. Before we do that, we need to ask the apps. There are ways to delete your data on the app. So you want to delete the data and then delete the app if you can. If you choose to continue to use these, try to seek out apps that are that at least say that they are trying to protect your privacy in some way. So there are, in some cases, ways to anonymize who you are. You might be able to use it online through a private browser window as opposed to on an app on your phone. That is, you know, that's, you know, then it has access to more data that's on your phone, especially, for example, in terms of location. So there are things that you can do if you use them, but they are somewhat limited. You know, as with all of these, it's, you know, it's better to delete. But obviously, we're also living in a digital age, and I totally understand that that's pretty challenging these days.
I'm going to throw the number out there again, 313-577-1019. Are you currently using one of these apps and reconsidering how you're using it? Are you concerned about how your data may be used? I would love to hear from you. 313-577-1019. And Shabitza, some people are trying to offer alternatives that seem safer for women and for their data. Planned Parenthood has encouraged people to use their app called Spot On, which lets people use it anonymously and stores the data only locally on their phone. It's not being sold to a third party. It's not available in theory to law enforcement. I mean, are there options that are, some are better than others that people still could use?
Yeah, I didn't know about the Planned Parenthood app, but that sounds like it's in the right direction in terms of, you know, you want to be looking for people who are not selling the data to third parties, where it is saved locally, where you're able to use it anonymously. But there are still risks, even with an app like that, right? So if I would ask questions about whether or not the information is encrypted, whether the information, includes location, what access, you know, does law enforcement have if they have a warrant, or they even, you know, there's something that has emerged in recent years that's related to all of this stuff, which is that law enforcement can often, you know, ask you to consent to opening your phone in various ways. And if that happens, then all of that data is available to law enforcement. So there are still problems with collecting that information on the device, but there are apps that at least go a little bit further.
You know, beyond the period tracking apps, we give so much of our information over to health apps. Generally, I think, you know, health related apps take up in some situations and some online stores up to 70% of the apps are related to your personal health and take information about your personal health. And it really makes me start to think, you know, we're aware that our data is being sold. We're aware that the data that we have out there can make us vulnerable to a lot of different things, scams, law enforcement, whatever it may be. But it seems like people don't seem that concerned that we're just sort of giving it away. I mean, when we talk about that pushback, let's kind of go big picture here. I mean, are we past the point where people are even worried about this anymore?
I don't think so. I think actually that concern is growing. It may be growing at a slow clip, but actually the, you know, Dobbs ruling is a pretty good example of how people are starting to realize how it affects their lives. And, you know, I think that the reason why we haven't paid as much attention to it is that, like a lot of the things that I think about on the regular, it's super complex and technical, right? And it seems also abstract, right? Like, what is our data? What is it exactly that they're collecting about us? But in practice, I think we're starting to see how this has real impact. You know, the story I told you about the Mississippi woman, right? Period tracking apps, the Cambridge Analytica scandal, but also, you know, we've been talking, for example, about misinformation in the, you know, that's in the ether, right? And there is a real relationship between the data collection and misinformation. But I also want to tell you something that gets at the health dimension that I just read yesterday, which is that there are companies who are essentially using information that we are putting, you know, it putting into Facebook, for example. Let's say, you know, this is particularly around dubious or untested cancer treatments. And basically, there are outfits that see that you're talking about certain things. And then, you know, we talked at the beginning, right, about them selling you stuff back. But in this case, they're selling you dubious. They're providing misinformation, essentially. They're selling you dubious cancer treatments, which is incredibly dangerous, of course, right? But there's no control over that, or at least that control hasn't been exercised.
Right.
So I think that the more that we become aware of the kinds of implications, then, you know, my sense is that the groundswell of concern will grow. But I also think part of the problem is that we don't necessarily know what to do, right? So I think maybe we're concerned, but then what, right? Like, you know, I can, you know, as I said before, you might delete things or go incognito or get, you know, Signal as your text messaging app, but that's not a lot. You know, it is a sea against you. And so, you know, trying to get government to shift, we all know is hard. But I think that we're in that period right now. One of the things that I think is a good way to think about it is to, you know, there's an organization called the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And they say so they're useful because they actually offer a lot of guides to people in various ways of thinking about your privacy. And I think they also have been thinking about, you know, for people who are involved in protests, you know, nowadays people who are involved in abortion protests or Black Lives Matter protests, you know, how to make sure your data is secure when you're doing that. But more generally, they make a point that I think is really interesting, which is they talk about how privacy is a team sport. And I think that that framing is actually kind of interesting to think about how it's not just about you and the government, right, and these private companies, that there might be ways for you within your communities to actually privilege privacy, right? We're going to decide that we're all going to, you know, I did this with my girlfriends about a year ago. I kind of convinced them all to move to Signal. I think that's been a good move, right? And it also kind of starts to sensitize them to thinking about these sorts of things.
That's a really good point. Sometimes, you know, if you're trying to get in the gym more, bringing a friend can be helpful. So I think anytime you're trying to make those changes, you know, bringing the community in can be a helpful thing. Shobhita, this has been a really fantastic conversation. And your job really is to think about these things, forecast these things. So I have to ask, you know, over the next year, 2 years, 5 years, I mean, what are the things that you're really paying attention to, maybe, you know, excited about or worried about when it comes to the space of our data?
Yeah, I mean, I am worried about, I have been worried for a while about encroaching surveillance, technologically enabled surveillance, right? I mean, you know, we're talking about Detroit and we're, you know, there we've seen kind of widespread use of facial recognition technology in our neighborhoods. We're talking about, you know, Ring doorbells and, you know, lots of us have Fitbits and other kinds of technologies. We've been talking today about period tracking apps. You know, so these are all, you know, conveniences. There are ways to maximize our personal safety, but they are also not only, you know, causing the kinds of challenges that we've talked about in the last few minutes, but they're also normalizing surveillance in ways that worry me. And I think that this most recent Roe ruling, you know, will jolt us a little bit. And so I'm curious, on the one hand, what are the, you know, I've been shocked at the creative ways in which law enforcement has really begun to use the kinds of data that we don't realize that we're leaving everywhere. But what I'm hopeful about is that not only will that galvanize publics, but that will really start to organize and pressure government to do something about it. That has not You know, we've seen that in the, you know, we I guess the last few years, we've got kind of more of a mobilization culture emerging, right? People are starting to get frustrated and they want to see change. And I think that this is an important terrain where that change might take place.
That is Shobhita Parthasarathy, professor of public policy and director of the Science, Technology, and Public Policy Program at the University of Michigan. Talk to us about concern around privacy laws, our personal data. It continues to grow as more monitoring of our daily lives in so many different ways. Shobhita, thank you so much for taking the time. I think we definitely have to have you back on the show because there's still so much to talk about when it comes to this topic.
Oh, yeah. And it's growing.
Shobhita, thank you so much.
Thank you.